This call today is a preview to our upcoming course, which is called Becoming a Change Agent. So I'm going to start with a question. Do you ever grapple with how to step into your life as a leader? Or possibly how you could inspire positive change simply by expressing your values openly and standing up for what you care about with love and courage, no matter where you are or who you're with? Do you ever struggle with that? In my own life, I know I've struggled with these things, and I've pondered them over the years, especially before I started to learn NVC. Some specific examples of how it showed up for me is a time when I asked the men in my family to stop telling sexist jokes in front of myself or my young nieces. Another time was when I talked to a boss about how his decisions to keep him out of supervisory positions actually sabotaged his very own desire for a growing and thriving organization. And then in another time, I spent a year participating in weekly admin meetings. This was when I worked in a university setting. That someone else led. I didn't lead the meetings myself. And the meetings left me feeling bored and uninspired. I wondered, how could I actually inspire enthusiasm and engagement just by changing my own actions? And I did, actually. Another time in my life, I pondered, if I'm not going to be an activist, since I haven't actually considered myself an activist, does that mean that all I can do is just live my own life and accept business as usual, even though I might not agree with it? I hope you can relate to some of these situations I've brought up. I've really tried to think of some specific times in my life when I grappled with how to step into this role of being a leader, even when it was uncomfortable and certainly not politically acceptable to the people I was with. I can think of so many times in my life when I longed for a way to shift cultural habits and norms and to demonstrate care for others at the same time. I didn't want it to be an either-or kind of situation. And many times I didn't think I had the authority to do so. And then later on in life, I realized, actually, I do have the authority, but at the time, I didn't know where to start. So if you're like me then, learning how to bring your power to whatever situation confronts you in a way that can actually benefit everyone is sheer liberation and freedom to the nth degree. It's truly empowering to myself and to all the people around me. And that, my friends, is what this class is all about. And we have the great privilege, once again, of having Nikki as our fearless leader to lead us through the dilemma that many of us face. We're going to start the call with Nikki working with one of you to demonstrate some of her process. And then she and I will spend some time talking about her upcoming course, Becoming a Change Agent, which starts August 14th. And for ongoing course, we'll expand on all the things that come up in today's session. What we're hoping you walk away with are three things primarily. Simple tools for opening a pathway for you that leads you from passivity and overwhelm to empowerment. Clarity for how to own your power so you're able to contribute to what matters in your life for yourself and also for the benefit of all the others in your life, and skills for inspiring others to do the same. I hope that you're excited about it. I know that I am. As I said, I love these calls with Mickey. This call is about stepping into your power in such a way that everyone in your life benefits, stepping into your power in a way that everyone in your life benefits. So with that, Nikki, I'd like to turn it over to you and have you work with a volunteer on the call. Welcome.
Thank you, Mary. It's a real pleasure to be here today and to see so many people interested in this topic, because on my bad days, I think that no one is. On my bad days, I think everybody just wants to live their life and disappear and not engage. So seeing so many people signed up is supportive for me. So that's first of all nice, because, you know, one of the insights that I had that I want to share before even speaking to anyone is that for many years, much of my attention was focused on being disappointed that I'm not somewhere else. I know this is sounding strange, but what I mean by somewhere else is with the right people who have the right power, with the right audience, in the right place where some real change could happen. And one moment after another, dismissing where I actually was. And it was a great revelation to me when I realized that I can actually change my orientation. And for years now, the way I've been living is every moment, wherever it is that I am, doesn't really matter. Whoever it is that I am with, that's the moment in which I can exercise my maximum power. It's not some other moment when I will get to do it. It's this one. That is kind of like the essential message of what I'm hoping to do in this course and starting with this call today. So I am very curious to hear, first of all, how many people are grappling with some of these questions that Mary raised or that I'm speaking about now? How prevalent is this question for people? There are 67 people on the call, and 43 people said that they're grappling with it. That, to me, in and of itself, is an indication of just how much our collective life is not working, that so many people are not finding a way to exercise their power in a way that's meaningful, that lives their values beyond just internally and in our very small relationships. That tells me that there's an issue. And so I'm kind of like reinvigorated by this to keep dedicating myself to supporting people and getting more and more able to do this. And now I would like to ask for specific volunteers, people who this kind of grappling is really alive for you today, in this moment, as you reflect on it, it's real for you. And you would like to do a piece of work today. I'll see how many people there are. Get a very brief description from people of what they would want to focus on, and then choose the one that intuitively speaks to me, since I won't be able to do everyone. So let's start. What would you be working on if I worked with you?
Yes, I have had a notion for several years to create a business to bring mindful practices to business environments. And while I have made a very bare little start on it, I really haven't carved out the time or felt ready, I guess, to go and actively promote to all the people that I know from my old business world.
Thank you.
Let's see. I'm in the process of pulling together a coalition to do some actions this fall in regard to climate and justice issues. And one of the groups that I think has the most potential is the local Occupy group, which Occupy has remained continually active here, but most of the action is in spin-off groups. So the main Occupy group, like, the energy is just very low. And I spoke a little about this at the last meeting, and I could see when I had more passion, it sort of brought people to life more. I want to do more of that, and I'm not sure exactly how. Like, I could probably figure out something about how, but I think it would also help me to work with you.
Okay. Thank you. What would you be working on if we spent some time together?
I've been doing volunteer work for the State Employees Union, from which I'm retired, but I'm still a member, where I've been calling people and encouraging them to retain their membership after they retire from their employment. And I've been trying to introduce ideas that come from NVC in the way the union deals with its constituency.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And encountering some challenges, it sounds like.
Some challenges, but actually the challenges are basically that people tend to buy propaganda from the media without thinking about it. And when I chat with them and express concern about their feelings and try to reflect back to them what I think their concerns are, how they feel and what their needs are, I've been finding it works fairly well. There's a certain percentage don't respond, but
got it.
Actually I've been happy and I just wanted to sharpen my skills and get better at it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So let me see. I think that I would like to work with taking an action about climate. I can't give a coherent explanation, but I just felt called to engage in this. And so I'm going to ask you if you know what's your biggest obstacle inside?
I think my biggest obstacle is that if I step up in a big way, that somehow that will mean that I'm stuck in that position, that no one else will then step up. And there's so many things I want to engage in. I'm really dying to see other people step up so that I can continue to move. I feel like my strength is more in starting things. And in any case, I just want to inspire more people.
Mm-hmm. So one of the tools that I often use in working with stuff like that, like some concern about what will happen if, one of the tools that I use to work with it is to continue the trajectory of the fear. Let's say that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
What would then happen? And keep carrying it all the way to the end so that I can really face what it is that I'm afraid of.
Okay. So what I imagine is that people would be like, oh, you know, that's great. Wow, you're so passionate about this and you believe in it. Great. You know, you go ahead and organize actions and we'll participate. And, you know, I probably would have the energy to do a lot of organizing on a first round and then on a first event. And then, like, I would want to stop. Probably I'd have other things I would want to shift to, and nobody would step up to do another one.
Great.
And
let's carry on. So then no one steps up to do another one. And then what's so scary about that? Let's say that you do one action and no one follows through and you leave. Why is that scary?
Yeah, well, it gets a little less scary just saying that.
Sometimes that happens.
But I guess it's that, you know, if I'm going to put a lot of energy into something, I want it to have ripple effects. And the idea that I would leave, I guess I would feel disappointed and I would judge myself for somehow having failed to get anybody else to take leadership and do more from there. That's one.
Uh-huh. Okay, so let's pause for a moment. Let's pause for a moment and just look at this one. So we've identified, and this is not always the case, but it does happen quite often, that we think that we have fear about something external, and then when we kind of like examine it, and then what, and what if, and what if, we come to a place of where there's something internal that we are afraid of. So I want to just hold this for a moment with tenderness, that part of the risk of taking more power is that you will take an action and won't live up to your own expectations. And then you will be harsh with yourself about it.
Mm.
Wondering if you have right in the moment the capacity to just take a few breaths and sit with that with tenderness.
Yeah. No, I feel tender about it because I often, you know, have that kind of fear. I often have some harshness with myself or fear harshness from myself or from others. And I really yearn to, you know, just have a deep sense of trust that I'm okay regardless of what happened.
Yeah. So let's sit for a moment and just take a few breaths because right now, you know, for me there's power in having 70-something people witness this moment. This is you, and it is also all of us, because you are so not the only one who struggles with this. Let's check for a moment. How many people have part of your fear about becoming powerful is that in choosing to be powerful, you will disappoint yourself and then get into a loop of being down on yourself? How many people have some aspect similar to this? John, do you want to guess?
20.
49.
Wow.
I'm actually moved to tears. I'm imagining that this in itself may, you know, chip away, you know, one layer of harshness towards yourself. Just knowing that you are so much not the only one on this call, at least. So let's take a few breaths with that.
It comes up for me. I just want to yell to everybody, like, you're okay. It's okay.
And then you're laughing because the irony is so clear.
Yeah, it's much easier for me to reassure others than myself.
So I want to say that part of what is necessary to be able to take our power is to realize that it's not an accident that so many people have this. And I was not surprised with the numbers, even though you were. It is set up for us to take everything out on ourselves. Because when we do that, our energy is diverted from doing something about the conditions of our lives. So from very early on in life, when we take action that is different from the norm, because, you know, this is a very clear-cut example. Taking an action about climate is against the norm, right? It's against business as usual. Stepping into power, unless you have been trained to believe yourself to be part of the elite that gets to do that.
Even with some of that training, which I have.
But I'm talking about the training of you go something like you go to the Harvard Business School and you know that you are slated to become a CEO somewhere in your life, and then you know that it's part of that you exercise power.
Well, that I went to Harvard as an undergrad, and my dad was a CEO of a corporation, so there was every expectation growing up that I would be some kind of leader. I'm just saying, even when we get some of that training.
Yeah. But fundamentally, to take power is to go against the norm. And anything that you do as a child that goes against the norm, the fundamental response is shaming. Don't do that. There's something wrong with you. Even literally, I've now collected, I'm not doing it systematically, but I now know of four cultures that use the literal frame of some version of shame on you as part of the standard way that children are raised. So it's not surprising that there would be so many people like this. So part of what we need to learn to do in order to become change agents, and whether that means activism or whether that means finding a way to talk to your bosses or whether that means engaging with strangers on the street, it doesn't really matter what it is, but part of what is necessary is to learn to walk towards shame instead of away from it. Am I making sense to you when I say those words?
Yeah.
It's important for me in thinking about walking towards shame that we don't walk too far. In other words, if you walk too far, you will be overwhelmed by the amount of feeling that will come up. So it's about finding just the right balance of challenging yourself to walk in the direction that shame tells you not to, and not too much. And I'm wondering if you can just take a moment to reflect on this and see if you can apply it to the situation that you're in.
Yeah. I can just sit and imagine what it would be like to not have anybody take up the baton and feeling ashamed. And I can imagine, at least, sitting with that shame and connecting with it or getting some support to connect with it, with what's behind it.
I have another suggestion. And that suggestion is that you act transparently from the beginning, that you tell people that you know yourself to have a lot of energy in the beginning of things, and you are not a follow-througher. you really want to lend your energy to the group to do one action, and that you would love it if there was someone who was excited to work with you and maybe even be mentored on taking over once you've run the course of your energy. And that you want to set it up front because you are worried that if you don't speak about it, you will do the action, then move away, and then eat yourself up.
Yeah.
The transparency is, to me, kind of like a cauterizing of a wound. Do you know what I mean by that? Like, it's hard, but it actually heals, in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
I'm offering it to you to try out. Now I'm going to take some responses.
Thank you very much.
Sure. So I would love to take any follow-up question or questions or comments from people. Obviously, this was of interest to many who could identify with the kind of challenge. So let's see.
When you said learn to walk towards shame, I stopped and I didn't get what you meant. When you said walk in the direction that shame tells you not to, I felt this like surge of power in my body, but not too much. Could you talk a little bit about how to cultivate that discernment?
Yes. Some of it requires self-knowledge. The self-knowledge is about tendencies and habits that you have. If you have, and from the little that I know you, you don't have the habit that I'm about to say, but since I'm not talking only to you, I want to make it a global. But if you have a habit of playing it safe in life, really protecting yourself from risks, being prudent, cautious, really weighing things before making decisions, I would turn up the volume on risking walking towards shame. If your habit is bravado, where, you know, like, something needs doing, I'll do it. I'm the kind of person who will risk anything. Then you might want to turn down the volume. Because the risk inherent with that pattern, which I think is more yours, isn't it?
Could be. I think I have a tendency to get really excited and say, yes, let's do this. And then I loved what you just shared because I think like many of us, most of my juice is in the initiating and the getting things going and the putting people together. And I definitely have a fear of letting people down at the back end.
Okay, so this is not about whether you carry through or not. It's about whether you kind of like take risks or you tend to play it safe. It's on that vector. It's not about follow through.
Okay.
And I say my sense of you is that you have tended to put yourself in, you know, kind of like challenging spots on the planet with challenging people and challenging circumstances. So if you want to take on the practice of walking towards shame, I would suggest for you personally that you be tender about it rather than strong. Because I think those of us who just do anyway often do it at the expense of allowing ourselves to feel our feelings in full.
Yeah, that resonates.
Yeah, and so the discernment point is about, first of all, getting yourself outside of your habitual way of being and challenging yourself enough to feel discomfort. And the not too much means that you can still be present and make grounded choices. Because I know your relationship to Judaism, I will say that in Judaism, the measure is for this kind of a thing is whether you can still study the Torah. If you can't study the Torah, then the discomfort is too big. And I use it not literally, but as a metaphor. If I can bring my presence to my choices, then I'm probably okay. Make sense?
Yeah, right now that's resonating more for me. I mean, immediately resonating in my personal life. And I'm excited to look and see how that resonates in the work play out there in the world.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you this much. It doesn't matter in which arena you walk towards shame. Once you start walking towards shame, you will have more resilience about it in other places. It's my prediction. Thank you. Thank you for that follow-up, that kind of like allowed zooming in on a very important area. So thanks.
Thank
you. Okay, anybody else?
Hi.
Hello.
I wanted to mention that when I think about walking towards shame, I wanted to bring up the work of Brené Brown and how her work has helped me very much walking towards shame and knowing when I have too much shame and knowing how to get myself out of a shame spiral.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
I am hoping very much that someday somebody will connect me and Brené Brown, because there is so much parallel between what she's doing and the frames she's using and what I'm doing and the frames that I'm using. And I have a sense that we can support each other in some way. So I'm putting it out to the universe. I would love to connect with her.
Wow, thank you.
Okay, anybody else? Any questions or comments about the piece of work that I did and then whatever came beyond? Yes.
Yes, this is quite wonderful. I didn't realize that things I am not pursuing was because of shame. I didn't really see where
mm-hmm.
it was taking me. And now
mm-hmm.
I do. I am one who challenges people and really interested in having an effect in having them see the other point of view. But as you were saying, I need to turn I don't know how to do it. I don't have that wonderful charm stuff, and I need to turn the volume down. Do you have any phrases or comments or suggestion about that? How to turn the volume down when you're challenging someone, when you're bringing
It's not about challenging someone. It's about challenging yourself. When
okay,
I talk about walking towards shame, for example, the message that comes from shame can be, don't say that. You know, nice girl, don't speak like this. Something like this. I don't know you, so.
There were two different comments. One was that one. And the other one was, I do want to make change, and I am more than willing to stick my neck out to do it. But I don't do it well. I need to turn the volume down.
The turning the volume down that I meant was about how much you challenge yourself to walk into shame. These are two separate things. So if your question is, how can you challenge people in more compassionate ways, is that the question?
That is the question.
I would say that before you challenge someone, make sure, A, that you see their humanity. Really see it, not in some kind of abstract notion that everybody's human and everybody's doing the best they can, but really specifically see what might be leading the person to do whatever they're doing that you are planning to challenge them on. Really have that picture in your mind, number one. And number two, that see if you are confident that in challenging them, you are also caring for their well-being. Those are the two things that will help you challenge people with more compassion.
I can see the empathy. So NVC, empathy. And then, am I confident I'm caring for their well-being? I have to think about that.
Because we are so habituated to the either-or paradigm. It's like if person A is doing something that is harming person B, really what needs to happen is person A needs to stop doing it and be punished. That's our simple solution for, let's say, injustice. Does that ring familiar?
Absolutely true.
And in my mind, if we manage to get person A to stop doing whatever they're doing to person B and be punished, we didn't change the paradigm within which the world operates. We only changed who benefits and who suffers. And for me, that's not a goal for me. I'm not interested in other people suffering so that I can suffer less. So if I want to change the actual frame of the way the world operates, what I want is to find a way to challenge person A so that they will be motivated to stop doing whatever they're doing to person B and will open their heart to maybe learn something new and see that in some deep way, they're not benefiting from doing whatever they're doing to person B. This is the big dilemma of our world. You know, there's so many of us that are benefiting at the expense of others in a very narrow sense of the word benefit. You know, we have all these gadgets, all this abundance, all this everything, and it is at cost to a third of the world's population that is suffering. At least that third. You know what I'm talking about? Or is this news? So to create change in that requires both changing the systems and changing the consciousness that allows this to happen. Because if we don't change the consciousness and we swap it, then the third of the world's population that is suffering, if they somehow get into power, they will oppress the people who are in power now. That's not the world I want to create. You with me?
I am.
Thank you.
I am.
Thank you so much. There are a couple more people with comments or questions.
What you just said is right at the core of where I'm trying to go, and I'm wondering if you have a thought or an experience you can share about changing systems and changing consciousness and whether that needs to happen in concert, sort of changing the system and the consciousness all at once, or whether you change consciousness and then people start to see that the system needs to change, or whether you change the system and that helps bring... I'm trying to figure out, is there an order in which that is best practiced?
You and arts and millions of us are trying to figure it out. I don't really believe that anybody has the answer. I will say this. To me, the idea of just working on changing consciousness and then when enough people have their consciousness changed, the world will change, that idea has too many problems with it to be a solution. And I don't see that, you know, within the frame of this call, I can get into the details of that. But I've written about this on my blog, so you can find thoughts about this if you look through my blog. The second piece is we have now enough proof that changing structures per se doesn't change consciousness. Just looking at the very tragic experiments with socialism, communism turned state dictatorship. The consciousness of people didn't change in the direction that was hoped for. So then the question is, what is the synergy? What is kind of like, how do you do both? And my personal answer is surrender to the mystery of not knowing and not being able to know what this is. And therefore, doing everything possible wherever I am. You see what I mean?
I do.
So I had an opportunity, only one so far. I had an opportunity to work at a system level, which you can read about on the BNVC website. When you go to the social change area, you will see a project that I did in Minnesota working with legislators and others on collaborative lawmaking. I facilitated a group, and they passed legislation that was passed almost unanimously after, I think, 12 or 13 years of bitter debate. And in the process of working on it, at least some of the people got transformed. So I will work on a system if that's where I can. I will work on a consciousness if that's where I can. But I will always hold both in my awareness. Choose to promote both as much as I can, given the context that I'm in. Hope this is an answer that can help you some.
Yes, thank you very much.
Sure. So there are two more questions or comments, and I'm going to take them briefly and then pass it back to Mary.
I'm just curious if you have some advice or insight on dealing with comparing myself to others and sort of, you know, how do I use that in a constructive way?
Thank you. I have been working for a long time to relieve myself of the tendency to compare. I haven't seen comparisons helping me in any way. I don't know that they can be turned constructive. And part of it is that we cannot help but compare our inside to other people's outside. We are comparing apples and oranges. And,
because we have different experiences? Because we're just
no,
different
because
humans?
we don't know the inside experience of another person. We only look at their accomplishments.
Right.
And
uh-huh,
we go,
yeah.
Oh, they have all these accomplishments, and I am this useless person, and I have so many doubts, and blah, 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 blah. But they may be having doubts, too. And you have no way of knowing. So rather than comparing yourself, I find it much more helpful to focus on where you want to be for yourself relative to who you want to be and what steps can you take to move in that direction and just stick with that. That would be my very short advice.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, thanks. And one last...
Thank you. It was about when you said that you want to kind of measure your strategies, I guess, by whether it's showing care for people you're challenging. I was thinking about the BDS, Boycott, Divestment, Sanction campaign against Israel. It resonated, oh, maybe that's why I have a problem with it. I don't trust that
it's
for
punitive.
That.
It's punitive in some people's hands.
So that's the question. In some people. But not in everyone. So when you're talking about a vast political movement, you've got this real diversity of intention. So how do we engage there?
You just put out the message that you are aligned with everyone who wants to create change. And you want the frame to be that the change will benefit everyone in the region.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, back to you, Mary.
Thank you, Mickey. Thanks for the call. I actually really enjoyed this call in all its dimensions, so thank you. So I'm just going to ask a few questions, Mickey, to help us kind of get a better feel for the ongoing course. So in the beginning, I offered a few examples in my life when I wanted to step in a leadership role. In a way, in situations that were challenging, when I talked about my brothers making sexist comments, and I mentioned a few others. And I imagine that everybody on the call has had a moment or two like that in their life where they didn't think others were upholding the dignity, so to speak, of other people, and they wanted to speak up about it. So how would you suggest someone approach such a situation in a way that doesn't shame the other person? And also, how can they find the courage to speak up in the first place?
So I think we kind of spoke about the courage a fair amount. So I want to stay focused on what's a way to do it that doesn't shame the other person. And I want to say, first of all, this is a tough situation. It is extremely difficult to navigate it with elegance. And I remember an early time in which I did this. that I wouldn't necessarily do it in the same way now. And that was, I was working at an office, and I was in a corner office in a kind of like a U-shaped floor. And in the hall right outside the office, there was an administrative assistant to that department. And everyone going to the men's room had to go by her desk. And she was young and pretty and well-dressed and all of that. So they often made comments and things that were really, really painful for me. And there was one day when one of them was really crossing a line for me. So I actually came out of my office and spoke up to him. And I expressed, I don't even remember how I expressed, because my internal language has changed so much since then that I don't even remember. But it was something about that I'm really upset to see him treat her like this, that I want her to be, I didn't say this, but that's what I would say if I was that upset today, that I want her to be seen and treated with the full dignity of a human being and not as an object. That she's there to do work, not to satisfy him. Something like this is what I said. And then he went to the bathroom and he went out, and I kept reflecting on it, and I was turned up and I was not feeling pleased about it. So I went to his office afterwards, and I told him that I, you know, I didn't know how it was, and that I probably said it in a way that was hard to hear, and I still would like to ask him to reflect on it. And he shocked me by his response. He said, "I have already reflected on it, and I see your point, and I'm going to change." So it was very affirming, because it was a situation in which I didn't do it well, and it still had an effect. So I think we don't learn to do it well without practicing and accepting that we might botch it from time to time. But, you know, in terms of like what would I think of to try to do it without shaming someone, is to hold in my awareness their innocence. Their innocence, their aim is not to make her an object. Their aim is to relate in the ways that they've been trained, to make contact, to have fun. That's what they're trying to do. They don't know that they're making her an object. So if I can uphold their innocence, I have more of a chance of standing up in a way that doesn't shame.
Oh, I love that response, Nikki. And I'd like to actually talk a little bit more about this if you're up for it. I know we weren't planning on it, but I like your response and I want to go further into it. I love your idea about connecting with the other person's innocence. And also, the other thing I really liked was how you spoke up in a way that is different than you would today. And that whole idea about how we do indeed grapple with things and we're not going to be good at it the very first time out the door. And so what do you think are the qualities that you brought to the initial conversation with this man? What do you think the qualities are that actually created a willingness in him to change, to ponder it and to change?
Just so you know, we're talking about something that happened in 1984.
It might not be in that exact situation, but I'm curious about it because I think it would be helpful for people to even if they don't say it perfectly, to maybe come with a quality.
Yeah, I think I know some part of it. Is actually having faith that the person has the intention to treat people well and to speak with faith and hope. This is at the core of nonviolence, as I understand it. So, you know, Gandhi was convinced that what he was doing was ultimately going to serve the British, that it wasn't serving them to rule and oppress the Indians.
Hmm. Thank you. I think that is, if people walked away from your course with an ability to remember that, that alone would be an enormous transformation in a body. Because I think when faced with anything like sexism or racism, all those judgments that we have about why people do things, it's so easy to get stuck in the us or them place. So thank you.
Yeah. And I want to end with a paraphrase of something that Gandhi said. Gandhi said something like, I would rather train someone who's been violent than somebody who's been a coward. And my paraphrase is, in some situations, I would rather someone stood up in a judgmental attitude rather than not stand up at all.
Mm-hmm. Totally, yeah. I agree with that. Thank you, Nikki.
Mm-hmm.
So your first session is on facilitating from the sidelines. And I'm curious, what do you mean by that?
I think I mean something like what you were doing in your admin meetings. You were not the official
yeah.
facilitator, but you took actions designed to transform the climate, the level of trust, the efficiency of decisions, to support the entire group in moving towards its purpose more elegantly and connectedly, something like this.
Mm-hmm. Which is, to me, about getting that I had, that I was contributing towards the lack of inspiration that I was experiencing, that I was actually a contributor to that,
uh-huh.
and I could make
yeah.
a difference, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not just knowing that you can make a difference. It's specific things that you can do that can make a difference. And I don't know what you did, but I have some ideas about what people can do in those situations.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I just think that's such an important quality to develop because in not just, I mean, I know your focus is on the workplace, but actually it's anywhere in our life, any kind of relationship that we have to live in that leadership role.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, but this course is not about the workplace, becoming a change agent anywhere. It's not a workplace course.
Mm-hmm.
It's anywhere. It's you know, I've picked for this course four different configurations. One has to do with groups and communities, and it's you know, where you're seeing something happen and stepping into a role of leadership and facilitating. One is just across differences of any kind, anywhere, doesn't matter where you are, at home, in your family, and whatever, and just aiming for that intention of mutually beneficial outcomes when there are differences of worldviews, of social power, of all kinds of things, how you demonstrate that attitude of, I don't want to get my needs met at your expense any more than I want your needs to be met at my expense. That's awesome to be able to do that. And then the third week is everywhere. You know, we spend a bunch of time, you know, let's say being in a store, waiting at a bus station, being in a parking lot, anywhere. And most of us tend to think of those as blank times between a piece of life and another piece of life. And for me, it is part of life. And how can we transcend the ethos of isolation and make human contact with people we don't know? And the last one is, if we are activists, which I'm anticipating that some of the people who will join will be, then I want them to have a sense of doing it as change agents for the benefit of all, rather than trying to topple and, you know, with enemy images and all of that. So those are the four arenas that I've chosen, but I'm open to people bringing in a variety of situations.
And can you talk just a moment or two about the structure of the course? Like, do you imagine people bringing in their own situations and grappling with them? And
yeah, always.
Yeah. Okay. So there'll be plenty of practice time for folks and such.
Yeah. So the quality of it is similar to what we did here. It will be focused on specific things, and also there will be time in small groups. People will have some materials ahead of time and reflection questions. So that's kind of how it will unfold.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. And who do you think will most benefit from the course?
I think anyone who wants to find an alternative to living the life of a private consumer.
All right. Thank you, Mickey. And I just want to ask, does anybody have a specific question about the content or structure of Mickey's course? And Mickey, if you would field these questions.
Sure.
If you have a question, a specific question about the content or the structure of her course.
I have a hard time figuring out how to phrase things. Do you do that at all? Deal with that at all?
Oh, like you know, you bring a situation and supporting you, coaching you to find your words for how to say something that's important to you?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I do that often.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
For myself, I think this course is really about empowering oneself. And when I was thinking about how to manage this call today, so many situations came up in my mind when I wanted to speak up and live in the value that I hold in the world, and they were extremely scary times. And so I just want to reiterate that I think this class could be so powerful for anybody who's interested in stepping into your life in a bolder way and also holding others as equally valuable. Thank you all so much. I appreciate each of you for being present today. Thank you, and thank you, Mickey, so much.
Thank you, Mary. This has been really fun.